Rav Yom Tov Liman Heller was born in Bavaria in 1579, and a few days after his father passed away. So he was not raised by his father, he was raised by his grandfather, who was a Rav, Rabbi Wallerstein. And his grandfather encouraged him to go learn from the Maharal. Now, he sent him to Prague to go learn from the Maharal. The Maharal was rather worldly. He may have discouraged others from secular studies, but it's clear from anything you read in the Maharal that he knew philosophy and science and math. And the Maharal also had his ideas and shitot about Jews and learning, what they should know. And he felt they should have a broad Jewish education, not just Gemara. So he really emphasized learning Tanakh and Mishnah. So he actually followed the Mishnah of Pirkei Avos. Don't learn Gemara until you're 15. You know, 5 to 10, learn Tanakh. 10 to 15, learn Mishnah. And at 15, learn Gemara. So the Maharal's emphasis on Mishnah was, and he actively encouraged Tosfot Yom Tov to write the Tosfot Yom Tov, by which he is known. He encouraged him to write the Tosfot Yom Tov. We'll discuss that in a minute. Just a little bit more about his biography. He got smicha at a very young age, and at 18 he was appointed a dayan in Prague. And back then, the Beis Din did everything for the community. And in 1624 he became a Rav of Nikolsburg, Czechoslovakia, and it was explained to me by Shapsa that Mikola Moravia is somehow the same thing. Okay. He later returned to Prague to become the rabbi there from 1607 to 1629. Now at the time, the king, maybe Roman Emperor Ferdinand II, was fighting, I believe, the 30 Years' War. And he taxed his subjects, especially Jews. And the leadership of the community had to figure out how to pay this tax. So the Jews organized a commission, and they decided to make a graduated tax. The rich pay much more than the poor. And the rich didn't like it very much. So they brought the Shaila before Rav Heller, and he paskin liked the commission. Well, they're still not happy, and they can't fire him. They decide to get revenge. So they report him to the king, Rav Yom Tov Liman Heller, this man, at whose kever we're standing. So they report him to the king and say he's writing things against Christianity, and he's jailed and sentenced, according to some reports, to either death or many years of forced labor. And I'm going to tell you there's two versions of the story, and I'll tell you in a minute how we have the two versions. So he was saved from this edict. Either he was associated with the wealthy leader of Prague, Jacob Basevi, who was friends with the general Albrecht von Wallenstein, who also had enemies at the Habsburg court, or a non-Jewish prince or general from far away, France, was the ambassador at the court of Louis XIV, and he paid a fine or a bribe to free him. So in the end, they commute his sentence, and instead they give him a fine and exile. He has to leave. He has to leave Prague. So the community raised the money, which is ironic because part of the issue was that they complained about the money. So they ended up paying the money for his fine. But he was exiled and he needed a new job. So he first went to Ukraine and Volhynia. And there he left when they had an election for the rabbi, and it was given to actually the highest bidder, which stuck with him, you'll see in a minute. And he went to Eastern Europe, and all the communities in Poland started fighting over him. We want him to be the rabbi. We want him to be the rabbi. They're all trying to hire him. And he ends up succeeding the Bach in Krakow in 1643, which was a very important position. He briefly held a position in Lublin and in Ludmir. 4 years later, the Maginei Shlomo was actually buried somewhere in the cemetery as well. He was the Rosh Yeshiva in Krakow. He passes away. And in addition to being the Rav of the community, Rav Lipman also takes over as the Rosh Yeshiva.
Like Yeshiva Krakow?
Yeshiva Kadesh of Krakow. He became a member of the Vat Arba Artsot, we've been discussing for a few days, political and halachic power. And one of the edicts he made and passed was that don't let people buy rabbi positions. Like a rich father-in-law can't say, if you appoint my son-in-law as the rabbi, I'll pay his salary for a year. Don't let that happen. Well, he passed the edict. I'm sure, as you know, many communities were forced to not listen to it because they couldn't afford to pay the rabbi. And at the end of the day, this man's offering to pay his salary, so that rabbi is better than no rabbi, and they went with it. But one thing that happened during his stay in 1648 to 1649 was the Chmelnytsky massacres, Gzeirat Tach V'Tach. There's a debate how many Jews died. 100,000, 10,000, 20,000. At the time, he went to a gadol, or was they were trying to figure out what was the cause of these massacres, and it was concluded that the reason was, which avera? Talking in shul. And he wrote a Misha Berach for those who don't talk in shul. Misha Berach, Avotenu, Avram, Yitzchak, V'Yakov, Moshe, Aaron, David, Shlomo, Yivarech, et kol mi she-shomer pivul, shono, shelo ledaber beit ha-tfilah, Kadosh Baruch Hu yishmareo, mikol tzar v'tzuka, mikol nega ma'achlo, v'yachul olav kol ha-brachot ha-ktuvot b'sefer Torat Moshe Rabbeinu, v'chol sifrei nevim v'aktuvim, v'yizkeh lerod banim, chayim v'kayamim, v'yigadlim l'toro l'chupu l'masim tovim, v'yavod et Hashem l'keinu tamid be'emer v'tamim v'nomar amen. Then he spent about 5 years fundraising and caring for the refugees and their family. He wrote a few keynote that we recite about the Gzeirot Tachvatat, and he dealt with a lot of agunot as a result of them. And then in 1654, he died actually penniless because he had been giving so much to help all these people hurt by the massacres. He was quite prolific. In addition to the Tosel Yotov, which we'll discuss in a minute, he wrote an autobiography entitled Megillat Eva. So that is where we have one version of the story of his jailing. The Megillat Eva is entitled based on the story of them jailing him, you know, being malshin on him.
Why would you follow any other version of the story?
You're going to hear why. Some say to help fundraise for the massacre, he made it, and, you know, people made it sound worse, that's why you have that larger 100,000 number. So let's talk about the Tosel Yom Tov. It was long, so sometimes, again, it's published as Ikar Tosel Yom Tov. But he functioned like Tosfot. Who functioned like the Rashi and the Mishnah? The Bardanura. And he was bold, and he got that from the Maharal. He said, it's no different than a Parish and Chumash. You have to write what's right. The only rule is you can't conclude something different from the Halacha. And he also wrote commentaries on the Rosh on certain Masechtot and the Ramaz Torat Chatad, which is Ramaz book on Kashrus. And he takes positions that disagree with them. And he definitely learned Euclidean geometry, and he even quotes some famous mathematicians and scientists by name in his parish. And in his parish on Masechet Peah, he discusses the area of vineyard using what must have been at the time very new math. And in fact, he says, our math is better, and there's no shame to say we understand it better than all the previous parishim. And he wrote his parish on the Mishnah in 3 years, from 1614 to 1617, and he signs his name at the end of Taros, saying he was 38 years old at the time. He and his wife, Rachel, probably had 16 children, at least 6 sons and at least 8 daughters. And he mentions many in his works. Oh, you know, I just saw my son, you know, Reuven, Shimon, or whatever they were named. And he documented his lineage, and his descendants are among the more documented family, and there's many, many, many people who can claim are related to the Tosel Yom Tov. Among his Chashuv descendants was a man by the name of Aryeh Leib Heller. Familiar to anyone? Ksos HaChoshen. And his brother, the brother of the Ksos, Yehuda Heller Kahana, known as the Kuntres HaSveikot. In commemoration of his imprisonment and his release from prison, he established days of remembrance for his family and descendants, the 5th of Tammuz when his troubles began, and a fast day, and on the 30th of Adar, the 1st of Adar, a celebration of the anniversary of his nomination to the Rabbinate of Krakow, or on his release from prison. So, and that still happens. To this day, there are people, descendants, who gather in a hotel and have a big hilula. They read the Megillas Eva he wrote. He wrote a Megillah. They read it, and it's a Purim Katan. I don't know with Trump, I'm sorry. He wrote 2 sets of piyutim. First set from 1621 commemorates the defenestration of Prague, which is a good word about being thrown out a window, and the beginning of the 30 Years' War, and the escape of the Prague Jews from the Habsburg troops, and the Battle of White Mountain. And he wrote a second set of poems in 1650 to commemorate the Cossack massacres of 1648 to 1649. Yeah. Could be. I'm not the expert on that. I want to just add one thing from his parish in Mishnah. In Nazir chapter 5, he says explicitly, I am writing here something. This is not how the Gemara interprets the Mishnah, but this is what I think is correct. But he agrees with the conclusion, La Halacha. But he disagrees with the way the Gemara explains the Mishnah. And that, again, was part of his boldness that I said he got from the Maharal.
The אז אותו דבר גם במשנה, אפשר לפרש את משנה הגמרא. כאילו הראיה שלו זה מהפסוקים. זה ברור, זה לא שאלה בכלל.
He compares it to the Chumash. Yes.
What does he define as halacha?
The conclusion of the Gemara. When the Gemara says, halacha ke'ex, so that's a conclusion. Okay. Since 1881, Megillat Eva is published with a second part. And that was why would you not follow his version of the story? His son, Shmuel, relates the story of imprisonment and trial from his point of view. And in his version, the rabbi was helped by the French general Turenne, or Turenne, I don't know how to pronounce it, ambassador of the court of King Louis XIV of France. Why? Because Shmuel saved that man's wife and daughter at a park in Vienna when they were attacked by a raging bull. Two last points. If you look in this cemetery, where is he buried? So it ruined the story for me when Rav Shalom told us that this is where the Chashuvim were buried. But according to legend, this was the Muznach part of the cemetery. And one of these Kvarim right next to him was the Holy Miser. In some version, you know, Kalbach tells the story as Yasla the Holy Miser. It may have been Shimon the Holy Miser. But the 15-second version of the Holy Miser story was a rich man. Everybody knew he never gave any tzedakah, and they didn't really want to bury him. And he forced them to bury him, and they buried him on the edge of the cemetery. And then the next week, when all of a sudden everybody's lining up and asking for tzedakah, and he says, wait, what'd you do last week? And it was discovered that this person they all thought was a miser was actually secretly supporting so many members of the community. And as a way, you know, and they didn't even want to bury him, and they stuck him in the outskirts of the Rav Heller, according to legend, said, bury me next to him. So I have no idea if the story's true. It's important in Hasidish HaMaisa of note. And last, I don't know, you know. Sorry, I don't know which one it is. We're going to end with the discussion that I've been having this week regarding the Maharshal. Where was Tosfot Yontov on this debate? So in Rav Heller's Madnei Yontov on the Rush, on the laws of Kashrus and prayer, he followed the Maharal and the Maharshal and the Bach in opposing the authority of the Shulchan Aruch. In his Hakdama to the Madnei Yontov, he writes, we have to follow the plain sense of the Gemara as the fundamental source of Jewish law. And that work contributed to the development of the local halachic traditions in Prague. So you say, oh, that's how he felt. But then, that was when he lived in Prague, when he wrote that. He eventually came to Poland in the 1640s when he came, and he seems to have changed his views, probably due to the Ramah's influence here. When he sees what the Ramah did in this community, he said, okay, you know, Ramah was good too, and follow that. So that's what I have to say about it. Oh. Oh. Kalbach's ending, yes.
החלק השני של הסיפור שקרליבך היה באיזה כנס דתות והוא לא ידע מה להגיד שם. אז הוא החליט שהוא יספר את הסיפור על יוסלה קמצן קדוש והוא סיפר את הסיפור.
הוא לא רק סיפר, הוא ניגן את הסיפור.
כמובן,
יוסלה. אמרתי יותר הסיפור של שלמה היה יותר מ-15 שניות. You guys looked antsy to leave.
קרל בך.
כולם, כל המשתתפים מאוד מאוד התרגשו מהסיפור הזה. והיה שם סגן של בישוף שקראו לו ג'ו. והוא, אחרי המפגש, הוא בא לקרליבך וביקש שמחר שוב יש עוד חלק של הכנס, והוא רוצה שהוא יספר את זה שוב.
אותו סיפור.
אותו סיפור שוב. אז קרליבך אמר, כבר סיפרתי, שמעו, לא, ספר שוב. אז הוא למחרת סיפר שוב את הסיפור. והוא ראה שג'ו מאוד 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 מתרגש. ואחרי הכנס, אז ג'ו אמר לקרליבך, אני רוצה לדבר איתך, והם הלכו וטיילו. ונדמה לי שביקש ממנו לספר את הסיפור הזה עוד פעם.
עוד פעם, כן.
ואז הוא אמר לו, אני רוצה לומר לך שלא קוראים לי ג'ו, קוראים לי יוסלה מקרקוב. והסיפור שהוא סיפר הוא כזה. הוא חי כל השנים, הוא היה בטוח שהוא נוצרי, ולפני כמה חודשים אימא שלו, כן, הוא גדל במסלול של
להיות כומר.
כמורה, כן, ולפני כמה חודשים אימא שלו התקשרה אליו, היא הייתה כבר הייתה זקנה, והיא הייתה חולה מאוד, וממש הייתה על ערש דווי, כלומר עמדה לפני הפטירה, והיא רצתה לדבר, והוא כבר היה בתפקיד מאוד בכיר של כמורה, והיא אמרה לו, אני רוצה לספר לך סיפור אחד, וזה שבאמת אני יהודייה, ו... מלחמת העולם השנייה, בסוף המלחמה הייתי במצב מאוד מאוד קשה, וחייל אמריקאי לקח אותי והאכיל אותי ושיקם אותי, ואחרי זה חתנו, והתנאי שלו היה שאני לא מזכירה את היהדות שלי, שאני לא מדברת על זה עם הילדים ולא אומרת שום דבר. אז היא סיפרה לו, אני רוצה שתדע את זה, ואני רוצה שתדע שאנחנו מיוחסים ליוסלה קמצן קדוש, והשם האמיתי שלך זה יוסלה ולא ג'ו. והוא לא ידע מה לעשות, פתאום הוא בתפקיד כל כך בכיר של כמורה, ואימא שלו מפילה עליו שבעצם הוא יהודי. והוא כל הזמן, הוא הלך עם זה, הוא התחבט, הוא כל הזמן, הוא לא ידע מה לעשות עם ה... עם המידע הזה, מה הוא יכול לעשות עכשיו? והוא אמר לעצמו, ריבונו של עולם, אם אתה רוצה שאני אחזור ליהדות שלי, אז תן לי סימן. תן לי איזה משהו שאני אוכל לדעת שבאמת אני צריך לעזוב את התפקיד שלי ולחזור ליהדות. וכשבאת עכשיו, הוא אומר לקרלי, באת וסיפרת את הסיפור, אז זה היה הסימן בשבילי שזה מה שאני צריך לעשות. קרליבך מספר שהוא רוצים מהכיס כרטיס טיסה, הוא אומר הלילה אני בורח מפה לארצות הברית, וסוף הסיפור שאחרי כמה שנים קרליבך מקבל מכתב שיוסלה כותב לו מהכותל ואומר שאני עומד להתחתן בעזרת השם מחר, חשבתי שאני רוצה עם בחורה יהודייה ואני רוצה לשתף אותך בסיפור הזה. עכשיו דבר מדהים לגבי הסיפור הזה, שאני מצאתי ממש את אותו סיפור עם ההמשך שלו, שמספר אחד מהשלוחים של הרבי, הרבי שליטא זצ"ל, שהוא מספר שהרבי שלח אותו, הרבי שלח אותו לאיזה כנס לספר את הסיפור הזה, וכל הסיפורים, אז אני לא יודע מי פגש את ג'ו, אם קרליבך או השליח של הרבי, אבל אז אולי באמת זה קרה.
אולי זה אותו הוא.
זה מכבד הסיפור הזה, אז יכול להיות שזה...
אולי זה קרה פעמיים. שני ג'ו.